Welcome to On Mission, a podcast from the Catholic Apostles Center. Today we are joined by Father Frank, Chris, Elise, and Tyler. We're discussing the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops.
Last year, in the beginning of July, the center was at the Convocation of Catholic Leaders. And this was an unprecedented event of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, sponsored by an invitation of the bishops, delegations from all over the country. Was it 156? Was it Tyler? Tyler had a lot of involvement with this in his other work.
Yeah, how many shameless people? Plug, I also work at the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. How many people were at the convocation?
Yeah, well, how many people?
There's over 3,000 people at the convocation.
Yeah, give a few of the stats.
There was about 160 bishops, over 200 national Catholic organizations, and 150-plus dioceses in the United States were represented at the convocation.
Now, this wasn't a regular event.
This is the first time the bishops ever hosted an event like this.
Right. Now, 100 years before, they had some other type of event. It was a meeting due to World War I.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That had come together.
Precisely. Yep.
And out of that came what was the National Catholic War Council, War Conference.
Correct.
And then for the needs of the war.
Mm-hmm. There was never been a world war before in the world.
No, of course.
And the church was wondering, how do we minister to hundreds of thousands of men who are fighting in Europe and hundreds of thousands of widows and orphans and Catholics that are left behind.
Yes.
And so the bishops came together as a sort of a national body for the first time in the United States and came up with a pastoral plan to minister to those fighting and those affected by the fighting.
And that continued on then into another body.
First, we should mention that the National Catholic War Council or conference was founded at Catholic University
of America, yes.
Yeah, the alma mater of almost everyone in this room and soon to be alma mater of someone in this room.
Well, and everyone was mobilized. Everyone was invited. Like, for example, the Knights of Columbus, which Chris and Tyler and I are part of, and Lisa's husband's very much involved with the Knights of Columbus as well. And the Knights had
supporting each other.
Collaboration.
Yes, and all of this collaboration that went on, everyone welcome, everything free.
And
you
the
know,
Knights
they,
kind of helped to support these chaplains that were being sent
overseas.
To minister to these folks, the men that were fighting, as well as the bases and the support staff that all went along with it.
And 100 years later, the Knights are still assisting the Archdiocese for the military services, which is really quite a thing when you look at it. And does a lot of support and did a lot of support over the years of this, what became the National Catholic Welfare Conference, first council, then conference, which was meant to really assist. We still had lots of immigrants coming. Lots of Catholic immigrants were coming into the, Ellis Island was in full operation, and until the early 1920s, mid-1920s, when immigration was lessened, there were still a lot of Catholic immigrants. Most of the immigrants were Catholics.
Right.
Who were coming from Eastern and Southern Europe. And so the Catholic Church really had to do something to mobilize the effort in that direction and also take care of Europe.
Mm-hmm. And kind of there was a need for organizing voices and the need to bring the church nationally together to support the work that needed to be done. And they kind of realized that there wasn't a function to do that. You had your individual diocese and these individual bishops that were all individually doing work, but not necessarily working together.
No, and it gave them an opportunity to really to collaborate with one another, which is what the Bishops' Conference is still about today, is for them to be able to collaborate with one without infringing on their particular jurisdiction. Sure. of their diocese and their shepherding of a particular geographic area.
So today, we would say that they help to organize the voice of, you know, the Catholic hierarchy in the United States to kind of speak out on issues of importance, to mobilize Catholics when necessary, to help support us domestically or internationally, things that happen around the world. And then they also support the work that these bishops and the diocese are doing around the country and around the world. In many cases, they help to administer raising money for various causes, but also through the work of a lot of the various committees, of which, how many committees are there?
I don't know the exact number, at least 16. Everything from Catholic education to religious liberty to evangelization and catechesis, divine worship, communications, justice, peace, and human development, international justice and peace, Hispanic affairs, migration and refugee services, lady marriage, family life, and youth,
pro-life,
the office of the Secretary of Pro-Life is a big one at the USCCB.
Clergy, consecrated life, and vocations.
Mm-hmm. Cultural diversity in the church.
And a lot of things that come out of the conference are things that are utilized by bishops, or, for example, something like the program of priestly formation, which is a document that's used to guide priestly formation here in the United States. That is under review at the moment and is being revised and changed. And that's that committee of clergy, consecrated life, and vocations that has gathered a working group to be able to revise that for the, I think it's like the sixth edition, mm-hmm. of that. And that will affect how all of the priests in the United States, all the seminarians, are formed. Which is quite so, because then think about that, because these are then the priests who then are in the parishes, who then are forming. I mean, it's quite a, and that also sometimes affects the formation. And it's, of course, off of documents that come from the Holy See and the church and church teaching and so forth. But it's interesting how something just that one quote unquote small thing, what the effect it can have.
Sure.
You know, in terms of the church, or some topics that are maybe could be considered politically controversial, such as abortion or immigration. And yet the conference, it advocates in both of those areas in a very significant way, which sometimes gets people a bit uncomfortable. I find it sometimes strange on social media when they'll be saying, well, you never talk about this and such, and, well, no, here.
Precisely. There's statistics online of the USCCB press releases, and it's very spread out across the board, the different issues. The bishops take seriously the issues that cut across both the left and the right and with equal distribution. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to clarify, you're talking about the PPF. It's not just like two bishops that are working on this.
No.
There's a select group of bishops that have an expertise, mm-hmm. and in vocations, et cetera, who are collaborating with other Catholic organizations in the country that have an expertise.
Seminaries, yeah.
And they consult with the Vatican, mm-hmm. and the entire body of bishops, which there are over 455 active and retired bishops in the United States, will get a look at this document before it's official.
Well, and having worked on a couple different documents, but one in particular that the center was acknowledging, Living as a Missionary Disciples, a Resource for Evangelization. Lots of resources on that on CatholicApostolateCenter.org. But that was 5 years in the making.
Yeah.
From the initial idea of coming up with a with a document to what it eventually became. Part of it had to do with some with shifts and changes and the Synod on the New Evangelization and then Evangelii Gaudium and some other things that came up. But it was a long process, and that was something that went through not only the committee but collaborating committees who looked at it, and they weighed in, and then went to the administrative committee, and it had a something that even goes to the, such as the program priestly formation, that goes, I believe it goes to the whole body of bishops.
I believe so too, yeah.
Yeah, and that's an even harder thing because now you have the whole body of bishops, not just the heads of committees there weighing in, but the whole body of bishops having the opportunity to say what their thinking is and so forth. And talk about collaboration. I mean, really, that's a very – and seeing it up close and being a consultant of one of the committees, the Evangelization Catechesis, seeing it up close and seeing how those bishops do collaborate with one another and the dialogue that goes on is really quite something to see, and how they take in so much consultation from so many different sources before any decision is made, that it's not just – oh, this is my whim, and I'm going to go ahead and do this. And the conference provides that structure and environment for that to happen.
So when we're talking about the conference, the USCCB, we're talking about, Tyler had mentioned this earlier, over
455 active and retired bishops.
And all of them are a part of this.
That's correct. Every active and retired bishop that is alive in the United States is a member of the USCCB. The bishops meet as an entire body twice a year in June and November. And in June, they typically tee up action items that they're going to vote on in November. And then in November is the big meeting. Typically, almost every bishop attends the November meeting. And that's when they'll vote on changes to documents, liturgical norms, things like that. But only the active bishops get a vote. So there's about 350 active bishops.
It's quite the
so
show,
that's what yeah. the that's what the bishops conference
and
is.
And you can watch it because of
it's
the
all
public,
live streamed.
The public sessions of that are live streamed. Some private sessions and the committee meetings are not.
You
available.
Can watch the whole show go down on the conference website usccb.org. Or various other.
Follow them on Instagram, and you could see 150 bishops going up the same escalator. Yeah. It's remarkable. Exactly.
It's a fascinating thing. There's just seeing the working body, or a working body of the church function and have the same issues that we all have every day, like clickers not working and things like that. It's a fascinating. I really encourage anyone who is interested in if you're interested in hearing what they're talking about, but B, just in for a fun lunchtime watch.
Yeah, no, I encourage everyone to watch in November. You will learn a lot about how the Church of the United States functions and the types of issues the bishops are wrestling with. It's really remarkable.
Sometimes people believe that it's almost like some type of supra organization that has control over bishops. Mm. Really doesn't have an authority. It was something that came out of the Second Vatican Council, and this the U.S. model was one of the ones that was looked at as something
exactly.
that other episcopal conferences in other countries could emulate.
So there are conferences like this in other countries or regions of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes, throughout the world. They after the Second Vatican Council, the document Christus Dominus, that document a decree of the council, which is on bishops, and so not many people read it, but there's a section about episcopal conferences and recommending that these episcopal conferences would be set up in each country. And after the council, in many places they're not quite as effective as this one is, because this one has such a long history
yep,
of
mm-hmm.
this type of collaboration going on. For 100 years, it's been going on, and that's quite an impressive record, because it's really assisted the church in having impact, advocacy, mm-hmm. Policy making on Capitol Hill, and in different parts of the country, so that the Catholic voice is heard, and the Catholic that we do get out into the public square and say, we're citizens, and here's our view as Catholics, but also in crisis situations, the sexual abuse crisis in 2002, and that still has ramifications to this very moment, and trying to grapple with these situations that no one bishop in his diocese is going to be able to deal with on his own, but is dealt with. And I saw the same thing in the Conference of Major Superiors of Men, particularly when I was a provincial, and now in my other work with the community in leadership, is that as a body, you start to realize how much you have in common and that you can work together. And these are things, these types of larger collaborative types of organizations can help to address some of these larger, because they don't, it's not just bishops, as Tyler's point was, it's all these other people, experts who are brought in to be able to bring their expertise to bear on a particular problem or issue.
Outside of the committees and the functioning, kind of bodies, what other work does the conference do that impacts the lives of Catholics in this country and around the world?
I think a lot of people would be surprised to learn that the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops has the largest migrant and refugee resettlement program in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge government grant that is granted to the USCCB to do this work. Hundreds of employees, both in Washington and throughout the country, that carry out this consequential work and help people in very concrete ways.
And the bishops have gotten attacked for that the reason why they're some pundits have alighted on that grant and said, well, the reason these bishops are interested in this is because they get all this money from the government and so forth. Meanwhile, we're a church of immigrants that have been pouring into this country for a couple centuries now. So it's a little, but even, one of the other things there were other things that developed, especially for international, relief.
You may be familiar with it from your rice bowl.
Yes, yes, yes.
The Lenten rice bowl.
When we think about that, what do you first think about when you think about like Catholic relief services? What does it do?
Think of like the corporal works of mercy. They literally clothe the naked, feed the hungry. They are out in the front lines everywhere from the wealthiest city in the United States to the most third world country, giving people assistance. And that is an initiative of the bishops.
Mm-hmm. That they do together. It's not just something.
It's not just one bishop.
One bishop that's saying, okay, now our diocese, even if they do that within their own diocese, this collaborative work affects millions of lives around the world, which I think sometimes as Catholics we don't. The other part is also Catholic Charities is another piece of this. While they function as independent organizations in certain instances, it is still organized and has an international character because this is part of the Holy See's effort. In these areas, Caritas Internationalis, which Cardinal Tagle is the president of, and both of those works come together in that.
Yep, there's
domestic and
Catholic Charities USA. Mm-hmm. Catholic Charities is well known for the amount of children they place in adoption foster care services, something that's been talked about largely in today's world, especially with the opioid crisis. More and more children need to be placed, and Catholic Charities does. Has a large share of the placing of children in the United States. Again, another initiative of the bishops. And the bishops do other things that are even crazier, like lobby for nuclear disarmament. And they have a voice in all of these big issues, which is surprising to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. All rooted in Catholic social teaching.
I think another way is also the tremendous resources that are there on the USCCB website that some people might know, for example, the readings of the day and the Bible that get probably
the most visited part of the site.
Yeah. But there's so many other resources that are there. We've used a lot of them on our resource pages because sometimes they're a little difficult to find and search for on the conference's website itself. But many people are amazed at those and sharing those because they'll say, well, I didn't know that about. It's a wonderful resource center where you can look at, because too often we'll go to these other people will go to, they'll Google something and they'll go and they'll find it on some site that's not. These are the teachers of the church. They are not going to put anything on that website that is questionable in terms of church teaching. Our resources are very highly vetted and reviewed, in fact, often by people at the conference who look at them and to make sure that they are sound doctrinally. But a lot of websites will throw up stuff. Or somebody look at something on Wikipedia, for example, maybe not. And so it's a wonderful resource in that way, not just for diocese, but for individual Catholics that can be shared and utilized.
I know that my husband and I perused, they have a section called For Your Marriage, and we looked at that during our engagement. They easily link, like, these are the options for the readings at your wedding mass, but they also link to, like, church-vetted natural family planning programs and other resources for marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's even a whole section on that website about dating. Mm-hmm. And so there are these specialty websites that are of the conference that are also helpful for different issues or for example for marriage or pro-life. There's a particular website that has some wonderful resources related to that.
Yeah, the pro-life secretariat has documents that go back decades. You can find a ton of stuff on the website. And just to give an example of the depth of the website, I brought up the USCCB marriage page. And here are just some of the subtitles. Marriage, Love and Life in the Divine Plan, Catholic Teaching, Marriage Preparation, Wedding Ceremony, Marriage Enrichment, Parents and Parenting, Children, Elderly, Difficulty Married Couples Face, Annulment, Divorce. And those are just subsites to click on. And each of those subsites has a wealth of information and resources. You can very easily get lost in the USCCB website. And like Father said, everything has been carefully vetted and approved by the bishops and is sound Catholic teaching. I work at the USCCB, and one common misconception is people always say, so you must see bishops every day running around. So the USCCB has an office building in Washington, D.C., and very rarely are there bishops there. The bishop's first and most important responsibility is to be the shepherd of their local church, their diocese. And the bishops do meet, the committees meet four times a year, typically quarterly, where the committees have intense discussions about the nature of their committee, and they set the agenda for how the committee should operate until their next quarterly meeting. And then they have a group of dedicated staff that carry out the mission and objectives and principles of the bishops. And like I said earlier, the bishops meet as an entire body twice a year. And the bishops are very engaged, but they don't live and work in Washington, D.C. They work
in Boise and Wilmington.
Exactly.
Anchorage, San Jose.
All throughout the country.
So the National Catholic Welfare Conference changed.
Right. Well, Pope Leo...
The 13th.
The 13th.
Founded Catholic University.
I was about to say that. won pivotal piece of writing that he produced was Rerum Novarum, which is Catholic social teaching in a nutshell. And that had a lot of formation post-National Catholic Welfare Conference's formation, and led a lot of their pursuits, which started the Catholic Relief Services and
supportive workers.
Correct, yes. And in the 1960s, a lot of civil rights movements were happening, as well as the Second Vatican Council. And in all of this, that was another meeting of the bishops saying, like, we needed to do something about the state, or of the state of the United States at the time. And so from that, they had, after Second Vatican Council, they had two bodies. They had the National Catholic Council of Bishops, which was more ecclesial, and then they had the United States Catholic Conference, which was more of the social life of the church and serving people, and didn't combine to form the conference as it is today until 2001. So the USCCB is actually, its roots are over 100 years old, but
the conference still today. A teenager.
Still, still young, still very young, yes, ever eternally young. I like this, the statue in front of the
Jesus hailing a taxi cab.
Well, it's really, and Christ our light.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the light of the world. And in the old conference, there was a picture that I saw in front of the old conference building on Massachusetts Avenue. And it was, you could tell it was kind of like an old, almost like Art Deco, because in the back was this light, this shaft of light on a rippled concrete background, and then you had Christ with his and at night it must have been quite impressive. It doesn't have that quite impressive look in the same way now, but it's still quite a statue that's there, really pointing us to our heavenly home. Like ultimately, what this is all about is not about just simply this side of life and the things of this side of life, but also our eternity and people assisting our brothers and sisters toward eternity. So it's not just simply, let's develop this bureaucracy. I think there are some controversial aspects at times with the where some will say, well, the moral voice of the bishops is just not... And maybe that's true in some instances individually, but I think in terms of in some places that people have kind of turned a deaf ear. But I think it's in that combination that the conference does provide an opportunity together to be able to voice about these larger issues. And that does have impact in a way that I think average Catholics, you know, kind of that don't realize what's going on, recognize how much of an impact that is, or they just see like little snippets on social media. And I still think that the voice of the teachers of the church, even if there are challenges at times and difficulties and sometimes not only bad decision making but heinous things that occur, there is still the work of Christ and in the mission of the church. And that, again, that's the divine aspect of what we're doing, where Christ our light brings light into that darkness and into the darkness that sometimes is very present in the world, but can also be present within the church, so as to bring the light of Christ into those moments to say, no, here is the one who is our salvation, not ourselves, but he's the one who's our salvation. He's the one who gives the light and can bring light into anything that is dark and evil and sinful.
And working for the bishops, I can say firsthand that a large majority of the bishops live their lives that way. They're committed to holiness, committed to helping their people, their flock. But the bishops aren't perfect. But when they come together as a body to talk about these big things, especially in June or November, it's with much thought, much prayer, and they often come to very strong consensuses.
For more information or to visit the Bishops' Conference presence online, you can find them at usccb.org. You can find us online at catholicapostolatecenter.org, where, as we said earlier, a lot of resources on our – a lot of the links and to articles and various web pages on our resource pages link back to a lot of USCCB resources. So we encourage you to take a look at them. And share them with your friends and family, with your parish, and with your organizations that you work with. We also would encourage you. Every month we send out two newsletters that talk about various things going on in the church today, in the United States and around the world. The special weeks that the Bishops' Conference have come out with for special devotion or for special. Things like Religious Freedom Week or the
Catholic Schools Week,
and as well as talking about the various webinars and events that the Catholic Apostle Center is putting on. So if you take out your phone if you're not driving and text the word apostle to 22828. That's apostle to 22828. And if you go ahead and do that, you'll receive a link where you can sign up for our newsletter. Just punch in your email address and you'll be signed up with us. And we encourage you to do that and keep in touch with us as we continue to expand what we do and to put out more podcasts and resources to help you live out your faith. You can follow us on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest. And we encourage you to share the podcast with your friends and family and make sure to review us with
five stars.
Five star would be great on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.